Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Sabbath Services. Well, through the past few weeks, everybody has been talking about Egypt, and so we'll talk a little bit about Egypt today and the Middle East in general and why that is such a problem. Because it is. It's really, really something. Now, let's look at just a couple of things here concerning Egypt. How it affects the end time. Let's come to Daniel, the 11th chapter. And I've already received some emails. Well, is this preparing the way for the King of the South? The answer, yes, everything that's happening is preparing for the fulfilling of Scripture. And that's why we need to watch, because it may happen in ways that particularly fulfill it, but we don't quite grasp it as it's happening, see? Because sometimes there are things that take place that are a prelude to the thing that's going to eventually come out. For example, let's talk just a little bit about the King of the North. We need to ask the question, will there be several rulers of a revamped Catholicized Europe before the final beast comes on the scene? And we know it's going to be a worldwide system centered with a power in Europe, and that's why it's seven heads and ten horns. And we know that the banking system has to be the first thing to be developed. Now, let me give you an interesting little bit of news. While Egypt has been going on, guess what is happening? They are now going to combine the stock exchanges to make one world stock exchange. Okay? Exchange chiefs seek global powerhouses. All right, listen here. The world's Burses, bourgeoisies, I guess you would pronounce that, are being swept up in an accelerating wave of consolidation after Deutsche Börse revealed that it was in advanced talks with the New York Stock Exchange to create the world's largest exchanges, okay, to operate revenues and profits. The proposed all-stock deal trumped the tie-up unveiled just hours earlier by the London Stock Exchange and the Canadian TMX Group, and would create the largest stock exchange by market value after Hong Kong exchanges and clearing. Okay? So, everything is being consolidated global. Didn't hear that on the news. Now, here's another one that's very interesting. Oh, let me just tell you a little bit about Egypt. I saw a special on CNBC, and they were interviewing this man in Las Vegas who was a seed exporter. And he exports seeds to the Middle East, to Egypt, to Saudi Arabia. And he was explaining about the corn and the wheat. Now, they cannot send genetically modified foods over there. But it was very interesting. What was one of the causes of the riots in Egypt? High prices of food. Escalating food. Well, there are many reasons why that inflation. We won't get into that. However, he brought out something that was really interesting. He said, we have a 45-day window to get the seeds out to Egypt, and we haven't been able to clear any of our import and export licenses yet, either here or in Egypt. And the reason it's a 45-day window is because that climate is so warm that they have a very short growing season. So if we don't get it there and in the ground in 45 days, then the price of everything's going to go even higher. Okay? Now, here's what they're doing. G20. Remember I've said how many times? Keep your eyes on the G20 or G27. however they look at it, in developing the world banking system, which will eventually lead to the mark of the beast. G20 eyes its first farm ministerial in June on food price surges. Farm ministers from the group of 20 developed and emerging economies plan to meet in Paris, possibly in June, to address surging food prices. It is surging because of inflation, lower value of the dollar, and also by creating a bubble. See, the emerging markets, everyone has said recently, get into the emerging markets, you're going to make money there. Well, it's a bubble that's being created, and it's going to fall. And remember, the superpower elite to control everything, they make money on the uptick, and they make money on the downtick. They never lose any money. It is their first ever gathering under G20 auspices, and the Japanese government was a source of it. The main issues to be discussed will be steps to stem price increases and setting up a mechanism aimed at monitoring speculative moves, the sources said. Well, they better keep a close eye on George Soros. Increasing demand for foods in emerging economies and the influx of speculative money, how do they get that speculative money? From the Federal Reserve. See? Print, 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 print. Okay? Now remember what we discussed before concerning Federal Reserve. What must they do with the stock market? They must keep the price of the stock market up, the prices, because they own and hold in trust in the repository trust company all the original stock. And as I mentioned, everyone who goes online and buys stock, you don't own anything. You have the use of the digital, whatever it is that you have that you see, you don't own and hold the stock. When you sign an agreement with a broker, you cede, that is, you give to the repository trust company the legal ownership of your stocks. You have beneficial use, just like if you buy a car, the bank holds the title, and you have a certificate of ownership. You don't hold the title. So they use these assets to loan money and to print money because they're an independent international bank having nothing to do with the U.S. government. Okay? So in order to keep printing the money, they must keep the stock market up. So that's what you're seeing. And they also need to have it go up as the extra dollars come out to inflate. And this way, the debt relative to dollars will be in percentages less. In other words, inflate your way out of debt with cheap money. Now, sooner or later, the whole world economy is going to collapse. But they will have the solution ready. But here, look, they're trying to get hold of it. What are you going to do with increasing population? And then what if you have some crop destruction? Okay? Increasing demand for food in all of these countries. Growing popular discontent over food prices and their increase has also been cited as a factor behind the recent uprising in Tunisia and Egypt, raising concerns among leaders in some countries. The idea of the G20 farm ministers meeting came from the French President Nicolas Sarkozy, whose country will host this meeting of the G20 summit this year, according to sources. Finance ministers and central bank heads from the G20 economies are expected to discuss speculative moves at a meeting in Paris from January 18th, including concrete steps to monitor them. Now, what will be one of the things that men have always tried to do when prices go up? Price control. International price control. Okay? The prices of grain and sugar are on an upward trend due to unreasonable weather in many parts of the world, with the UN Food and Agriculture Organization's food price index rising to an all-time high in January. The G20 comprises the 20 developed nations and developing nations of the world, including India, South Africa, Canada, Mexico, U.S., Argentina, Brazil, China, Japan, South Korea, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Turkey, France, Germany, Italy, U.K., Australia, and the European Union are the other members. So all of that behind the scenes, while all of this is going on with Egypt. Okay, let's come to Daniel, the 11th chapter, and let's see a focal point which starts the events at the end time. Let's pick it up here in verse 40. And at the time of the end, the king of the south shall push at him. So there's got to be a king of the south who is going to come. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. So there's got to be a king of the north. All of these things tell us there's a lot of development that needs to go on before they emerge. Shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. He shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and sweep through. Now, some people have said, like it was commented before we started, that one man says that Iran is the king of the south. Well, he's got a bad compass. They said that of Saddam Hussein. Actually, some said that Saddam Hussein was the king of the north, because in order to attack the Holy Land, he would have to come from the north, go west and then come south, that is, coming from the north. All right. Question. If you're coming from Iran, if you're coming from Iraq, or if you're coming from Syria or Lebanon, do you need many ships? Or can you come overland? The only reason you'd need many ships is because it's coming from Europe. And we're of the traditional fights been between the South and the North, but Europe, Catholicism, Arab countries, and Islam, right? He shall also enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. Then he's going to take over the precious things of Egypt. Well, Egypt right now is pretty poor. Okay, then the Libyans and the Ethiopians will also be brought into it. Okay, now I've done other sermons showing that. Now let's see what God thinks of Egypt. Let's come back here to Revelation 11. And we're going to see what God thinks of Egypt. You know, they have a lot of tourists. I don't know about being a tourist and going over to Egypt and, you know, seeing all those mummies. Why would you want to spend all that money and go over there and see dead people? You know, and as far as the pyramids go, they still have never figured out what they were for. I saw an interesting one where they said that it was designed in such a way that you put certain chemicals down into it and out comes an electrical exchange that is similar to microwaves, and this is what they used. And that the obelisks were those things then which pulled in the microwaves and used those for particular things. Now, I don't know if that is so. So you might have that as a study project for some of your technology students. Okay, that might be interesting to find out. All right, verse 8. God is talking about the two witnesses, and after they are killed, and their bodies shall lie in the street of that great city, which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Okay, now, Egypt, the original Egyptian religion, is akin to what we call New Age religion today. I think it's very interesting because we have something that is happening right before our eyes. Now, I've mentioned to many brethren, go ahead and watch Glenn Beck because he's giving good warnings about the finances and so forth and so on that's coming. But I said, be careful of his religion because he's a Mormon. Well, what is happening, he is bringing a form of New Age religion from the right. Who is the one that brought New Age religion from the left? Oprah Winfrey. The only way you're going to get religions together, even for a short time, is to have them to ascribe to some form of a New Age religion that God labels coming out of Egypt. So we'll have to wait and see that, what that turns up. All right, now let's look at some interesting descriptions of what we saw on television. Okay, let's come back here to Psalm, the second chapter, and this is what we're also looking at, Psalm 2. There are a lot of things we can tie together with this. But if you watch all the mobs, all the people out there, and I tell you, you look at that and you think, oh, those terrible, terrible, terrible people. Well, let me ask you a question. What would you do if you had to survive on a dollar or two a day? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Let's make it a little more livable since you live here and you have more things than just a dollar or two. Why don't you try living a week on $3 a day and see what happens? You know, in my case, I might even lose some weight. Who knows? Okay? All right, Psalm 2 and verse 1. Why do the nations rage and the people imagine or plot in vain? I couldn't help but thinking of that. All of them out there, you look at them, and as soon as they see a camera, television camera coming, boy, they really get into it and show their rage. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his Christ. And so that's what they're doing. This is what is happening with the whole development of the coming world government and world financial system. And that's why they want to do away with true Christianity. Let us break their bands asunder, because we want to control them, not God. And cast away their cords. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath, and in his fury he terrifies them. And then he talks about setting up the kingdom of God. Yea, I have set my king upon Zion, my holy mountain. So yes, that's going to happen. Let's come here to Isaiah 17. This one is a perfect description, Isaiah 17, of what's happening. Now, how many have heard the comment, when there are changes, substantial changes taking place in politics or in society, how many have heard the term sea change? Have you ever heard that? Okay, yes. Listen to the commentators, and you'll pick up on that. Now let's come to Isaiah 17 and verse 12. And I couldn't help but think what a tremendous description this is here, verse 12, about what was going on. Oh, the uproar of many people. Well, now they've had it, what, in Greece, in Italy, in Ireland. Now they're having it in Egypt. Oh, the uproar of many people who roar like the roaring of the seas, and the rushing of the nations who rush on like the rushing of mighty waves. The nation shall rush like the rushing of many waters, but he shall rebuke them, and they shall flee far off, and shall chase them like the chaff of the mountain before the wind, and like the whirling of dust before a gate. All these people in an uproar, I couldn't help but think, in seeing all of them, all the men were out there. Where are the women? I don't know, but I tell you one thing. Islamic religion is absolutely just the pits toward women. So if some women in America think you're oppressed, try a burqa and try living with a man who's given the right to beat you. And if you are caught in the presence of another man alone, to kill you. So I tell you, it's something. Now, let me give you, share just a little something else with you before we get into the nature of the people and why that whole area is unstable. There are financial experts who call everything from North Africa and on clear on over into China, not all of China, and up in the area of southern Russia. They call all of that chaos stand. In other words, the land of chaos. And in particularly in the Islamic countries. Now, they kill far more of their own than they do other people. And their sole focus now is to exterminate the Jews in what is called Israel today. Now, let's look at a prophecy concerning that, and these nations need to be careful. Let's come to Psalm 83, and then we'll examine the origin of some of these nations. But Psalm 83 talks about what is happening against the Jews today. Psalm 83, really quite a description. Now, I would advise Ahmadinejad and these leaders of the Arab countries before they set out to try and destroy what they call Israel and the Jews call Israel, to please read the book of Esther. Now, the book of Esther talks about an Achaemenid called Haman the Agagite. And being from Agag, he was a descendant of Amalek. And his purpose was to destroy all the Jews. So I think it would be instructive if you would read the book of Esther and find out what happened to Haman, because God will not allow these Arab countries to destroy the Jews. Regardless of what their sins are, he's not going to let them do it. All right, let's begin. Psalm 83, verse 1. Keep not silent, O God. Do not be quiet, and do not be still, O God. For lo, your enemies are in an uproar. Now, that also includes us, too. You know, the 10 tribes of Israel. People hate us. But then when things get tough and they need our help, then they temporarily love us. Now, I suspect that after Egypt gets on its feet, that what we're going to do to help keep the people from out there rioting even more, we will probably send a lot of food relief to help bring down the price of food in Egypt to help stabilize the government. Now, that's just my own opinion, okay? For lo, your enemies are in an uproar, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. They take crafty counsel against your people and plot together against your hidden ones. That's the church. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation so that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. God's not going to allow that. For with one heart they have plotted together, they have made a covenant against you, that is God. Because you go against the people of God, you're going against God. Now notice who they are. The tabernacles of Edom, that's all the Esauites. You want to know how many of those are around? Go back in the book of Genesis and read the genealogy of Esau, who is called Edom. It says Esau is Edom, right there. I think it's Genesis 39. And the Ishmaelites. Now, there are a lot of Arabs. Remember where Ishmael came from? Yes. Remember where Esau came from? Ishmael came from Abraham, and Esau came from Isaac. So we have a great, huge, gargantuan family fight between the ones that received the inheritance and those who didn't, between the ones who have God and those who don't. Then it also lists of Moab and the Hagrites. Now, those are those of Syria, Gebal, Ammon, Amalek, and the Philistines with the people of Tyre. Now, the Palestinians, the Jews say, are the Philistines. Where are they scattered today? Some are on the West Bank, some are in Gaza. A lot of them are in Jordan. A lot of them are in Egypt. And their intense hatred against the Jews is just staggering. And Assyria has joined them. They have helped the children of Lot, Selah. Now, Selah means to think on this. So here's a prophecy of those who are against them. Okay? And the majority of them come from Ishmael and Esau. So let's look at those, but let's just mention one other category that maybe are not quite so virulent against the children of Israel, but nevertheless may feel as though they are those who are counted out of it. Okay? Let's come back here to Genesis 25. We'll spend a little time here in Genesis in just a little bit. Let's come here to Genesis 25. Because there were other descendants of Abraham who did not receive the blessing. Now remember who received the blessing. Ephraim and Manasseh, then the other of the children of Israel. First Ephraim and Manasseh. And I think we're going to find, I was thinking about this and how it's very interesting concerning the children of Israel, which we'll cover in just a little bit. All right. Genesis 25. Let's pick it up here in verse 1. Then again, Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. She bore to him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. And then it tells all that they begat. Okay. Now, verse 5. Or last part of verse 4. All these were the sons of Keturah. Well, you know they have descendants today, don't you? Okay. Notice what Abraham did. And Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. But to the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he still lived, eastward to the east country. Now, question, are all of these small little countries like in southern Russia and in other parts of the mountainous area like Pakistan, Uzbekistan, and so forth, are they the sons of Abraham through Keturah? Okay. Do they feel left out of the promises? Yes, indeed. Now, with everything in such an uproar over there in the Middle East, how did this come about? Well, let's look and see what God says here. Okay? Let's look at Ishmael first. Let's come to Genesis 16. Now, here you have something that was legally correct to do. That is, for a barren wife to give a handmaid to her husband to raise up seed for her husband. That was legally correct. However, had Abraham had the faith he really needed, he could have said, no, God promised to give us our own. See? In that case, we wouldn't have any Arabs today. All right, but not so. See? So, here's another thing, too. Just like Eve, whenever your wife gives counsel that sounds good and may not be, think it over before you act on it. Okay? Because you know what happened. Sarai came to Abram and said, look, take my handmaid. Okay. She became pregnant. And after she became pregnant, verse 4, she looked upon her mistress with contempt. And Sarai said to him, my wrong be upon you. In other words, you're suffering from my wrong. I have given my maidservant into your bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes, and the Lord judged between me and you. So Abraham said, look, I don't want to get involved in this mess. It's already created enough problems. Do with her as you see fit. Okay? So she cast her out. Now, verse 7, then we'll find something here in how that even though this was a mistake and it would come back to haunt them as a curse, God still gave a blessing. Let's read it. And the angel of the Lord found her, that is Hagar, by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain on the way to Sur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maidservant, where did you come from? And where will you go? And she said, I will flee from the presence of my mistress Sarai. And the angel said to her, return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hands. And the angel of the Lord said to her, I will multiply your seed exceedingly, so that they shall not be numbered for multitude. And as you go down through time, all that have been born and died that were from Ishmael, that is true. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are with child and shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. Now notice the nature of the Arabs. He shall be a wild man. Now when you look at the thing in Egypt, what do you have? You have Arabs, you have Palestinians, you have Egyptians, you have other Middle East people there, right? Okay. They all have kind of a wild nature. He will be against every man and every man's hand against him, and he shall live in the presence of all his brothers. In other words, they would not migrate like Israel. Now you can go to 2 Samuel 7, where God told David. David wanted to build a temple for God. Nathan came and said, do all that's in your heart. God came to him and said, I haven't lived in a temple, I haven't lived in a house, but in a tent and tabernacle. Okay. But I'll let your son build a house for me. Then he said, and I will settle Israel in their place. Very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting, because that's a prophecy of the moving of all the children of Israel from the area of the Middle East. Who replaced them then? All the ones we've been reading about here. And you stop and think, the fulfillment of the promises that God gave to the children of Israel, of the 12 tribes and even the Jews, could not be fulfilled in the Middle East in this age. But they had to move. How could Ephraim become a company of nations unless they moved someplace else? How could Manasseh become the greatest nation in the world unless they were someplace else? Could it happen in the Middle East? No. No. Okay. So here we have, now you look at all the countries in the Middle East. Now if you're a Middle Easterner, I'm sure you can acknowledge this, that the Arabs tend to be wild people, don't they? And don't they have every man's hand against another? Fighting, warring, intrigue, slaughtering? Yes, indeed. Now, we also have to add into it a little later here, which we will do. We'll add into it the descendants of Esau, because that adds to it and stirs the pot even more. Okay. Now let's come here to Genesis 17, and let's pick it up in verse 18. Now this is when final promise came to Abraham that he would have a son of his own, and covenant of circumcision was given, where God said here, let's pick it up in verse 15, Genesis 17. God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but her name shall be Sarah. And I will bless her and give you a son also of her. Yes, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall come from her. And Abraham fell on his face and laughed in his heart. Shall a child be born to him that's 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. And God said, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son indeed, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. And as for Ishmael, I've heard you. Behold, I will bless him, I will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly, and he shall beget 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation, but I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this set time in the next year. So Ishmael was going to be blessed by God with a host of people. And also, in spite of the fact that they're sitting on all that sand, look at all the wealth that is below in the form of oil. So they have been blessed too. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. And then what we will do, we will come back and look at the descendants of Esau.